Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 64, Unified Storage. Let's talk about it. Today, my guest again is Scott Lowe. How you doing, Scott?
I'm doing great, Rick. Thanks for having me.
And no, thanks for coming back. I was talking to you about a couple of other things, and it's always tough to catch up because I know that you live quite a busy life. I live a busy life, but you know, taking the time to catch up is always good. Since we've last
agreed.
Talked. Yeah. Since we've last talked, you've had a kind of a big change in things. You've kind of taken on a new role of sorts, varietal in nature. Care to tell us about it?
Sure. Since we last talked, I've actually left my job as a chief information officer at a college and become a full-time consultant and author. And it's going extremely well. I'm doing more writing than I've ever done in my life, which is a good thing. I enjoy it. And I've been visiting a number of different colleges and universities, doing some IT strategic planning, and really enjoying it.
Good to hear. I know, I'll be honest with you, everyone, I'm jealous of his new role. When he told me about it, it was one of those things, I've always thought about doing that, but man, this dude actually did it. Rock on. Good to hear that it's going well, and occasionally you come through Columbus, and so it's always nice to catch up when that happens. So today, unified storage is the topic on the table. Let's start, explaining what unified storage is, first of all, the way I understand it, and by no means am I a storage expert, but, storage is critical to virtualization. It's critical even to non-virtualized environments, whether that be direct attached or SAN environments. But especially in the mid-size, medium, and small environments, there's a lot of opportunity for people to consider unified storage. So what do I mean by that? That means it's a storage controller product. It could be software on a commodity hardware, or it could be its own dedicated hardware device that communicates in multiple protocols. And what I mean by that would be a block storage protocol such as iSCSI, possibly Fibre Channel, and then also a network-based storage protocol such as NFS or SIFS, right? So like a UNC path, all on the same set of disks possibly, and configured through one product, so you don't have to have like a separate controller and set of disks for this protocol and a separate one for that protocol. Now, you can do that for granular management and maybe performance reasons, but for a lot of the smaller environments, these unified storage devices appeal. First thought, Scott, what do you think of unified storage?
I'm not a real big fan of unified storage, to be honest. I sort of take a clean approach and a simpler, what I consider a simpler approach to storage. Now, having come out of a small environment, we were a prime target for something along the lines of a unified storage story. But we opted instead to use our SAN in a more, what I consider, a pure way. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is, rather than exposing, for example, storage over NAS for Windows file shares and the like, I prefer to actually provision a Windows file server under the VMware environment and then deploy a file server in a more traditional way. Now, it might just be because that's what I'm used to, but from an administrative perspective and an integration perspective with our other services such as Active Directory, it was just clear. My administrators were more familiar with it, and it was easier for us to troubleshoot because it was just a Windows file server. For example, than having to worry about, if it's on this device or if it's on this device. So all of our shares were, our storage ones were provisioned the same way, and then our shares were done through more traditional mechanisms than just an AS device.
I'll go with you on that, because every time I've done a Windows file server, right, that traditional main file server that the whole organization uses, all except one of them in my professional experience have been Windows VMs living on block storage, and then you get to it over the Windows VM rather than leveraging the actual storage device. So that's based on my experience. That's what I've done as well.
Yeah, and I've been in organizations where I've gotten there, and they've had a NAS device for Windows file shares or for the file share piece of it, and everything else has been done in a traditional environment. And troubleshooting was difficult. I shouldn't say difficult. It was just added a layer of difficulty, I should say. And so when we made a lot of changes to the environment, we radically overhauled the environment. We went to VMware, which was not there when I arrived, for example. and we had to deprovision the storage and replace it with new storage, it added a wrinkle. You know, with one of the obviously one of the nice things about, you know, the virtual environment provisioned in a traditional way with Windows-based file servers is you have some of the hypervisor tools such as vMotion and storage vMotion that you can use, which is much more difficult with a straight-up NAS device. So I loved it. And so for those reasons, the management features and the administration overhead, we stuck with block-based storage. Yeah. For even our file-based services.
That's a good point because the VM is going to be a lot more portable. Cheap plug for myself, we can back it up a lot easier. And if you get into the realm of unstructured data, especially large expanses of it, dare I say, big little data, you can back that up very easily, right? Because if you have a huge expanse of millions and millions and millions of files, for example, like that's some sort of log of an event, image retention or something like that, it can be really tough to back those up once you get above like 100 or 200 or 500 million files. And don't laugh, this happens. Systems are out there that have this type of data profile. And really the only way to back those up easily is through something that's block-based underneath. And when I say block, I mean regions of a VMDK, which you can actually do on NFS. So let me flip it around a bit, Scott, because I've got another thing. You know, in the SIFS world, or dare I say SIFS, that's a deprecated term of sorts, but I mean server message block, Windows file and print type of networking, the permissions usually on NAS devices aren't as granular or as integrated as what you'll have in a Windows VM running on, like, block storage. But what about NFS? Have you used NFS much in any production capacity?
Honestly, no. When we did our VMware environment, we opted for VMFS on iSCSI and fiber channels, so we really didn't do much with NFS at all. Mm-hmm. In the environment.
I've played with it a bit. There was a time that I couldn't even spell it, but I've come to learn a little bit more about NFS. But one person that knows storage better than I do, he told me this. He said, whenever you decide on a storage product, and this really transcends any product you work with, ask the storage vendor, you know, which protocol does the device do best on, okay? And what I mean by that, I'll give you an example of one particular, I don't even remember the device actually at this time, but this is what the product engineer told me. He said, you know, think about this device, and we build our own Linux, right, that provides this storage. It's the controller software uses Linux, fair, a lot of them do. But he said, in this particular example, NFS does better than iSCSI, and in that case it was SMB, which is looks like SIFS to the browser. He said, for this reason, that it's one of those protocol on top of protocol things. That's what he said, protocol on top of protocol. And what he meant by that was that NFS is much closer to being native than the block protocols for that device. Now, every time you ask this question to a storage product vendor, you're going to get a different answer. But always ask them which one is their preferred or highest performing or quote-unquote best protocol, and then ask them why, and then you'll kind of go into, you know, maybe kind of steer you a direction. When it comes to virtualization, which is where, you know, I spend most of my time, and I guess, Scott, you still, you know, touch virtualization a lot, right? That's the underlying infrastructure. Of course, the apps are important, but you touch virtualization quite a bit, yeah?
I do. In fact, I've been doing a lot of consulting around the virtualization and even Hyper-V space.
Yummy. Good stuff. What I always tell people is when you decide on storage is identify what the biggest consumer will be. So that would be like vSphere or Hyper-V. Do you ever take that approach when you provision storage? What will be the biggest consumer? And then, of course, like, you know, what drive types and what protocols come in. But do you ever kind of look at it that way, like what's going to be using the storage?
Oh, absolutely. And you have to. You know, I say this is what I prefer. But in the real world, when you're out there looking at this stuff, you've got to listen to the requirements and then make the best choice around the requirements, even if your personal preference might say something different.
Sure.
In fact, I'm looking on a 9500 seat exchange build right now for a client. And I'm actually going to be recommending direct attached storage for the mailbox servers and physical servers, not virtual, for the mailbox servers. And there's good business reasons for that. There's good business reasons not to use the super expensive NetApp space that they've got for mail storage when they want to do two or three copies of the stuff. So it makes more sense to go with much less expensive direct attached storage, and then you're not worrying about any of that stuff. But yeah, and any of these kinds of decisions, you got to look at the situation, look at the client, look at the infrastructure, and say, what makes the most sense for this particular implementation?
I've heard a lot of people go in a direct attached storage route for Exchange of late, and physical for that matter. I'm actually, you know, I'd love to see everything virtual, but, you know, there's always still a case for physical, and I don't think it'll ever go away entirely. But I'm definitely seeing a lot of that direct attached storage use for Exchange, and it comes down to price, performance, manageability. But when you go virtual, you also have to think, if you're using the SAN, or actually you don't even have to be virtual for that matter, but if you're putting Exchange on the SAN, that's an incredible amount of I.O. that will be contending across the same, you know, switch infrastructure, the same underlying drives, the same controller, the same caching, the same smart tiering, all those other features that we want. He may be an adverse consumer, right? So there's downstream impact. That's good to know that, I've seen a lot of people do that. Interesting.
And that was just a tangent, but in this particular environment, it's only the mailbox servers that I'm recommending physical and with direct attached storage. All the other Exchange roles will be virtual, and they'll be placed into their VMware environment, which runs on the SAN. But for the reasons you just mentioned, the SAN could do it, but it's going to, from a cost perspective and the way the architecture is being designed, it doesn't make sense to do it that way.
Sure. What about, the small remote office, right, in your consultancy practice? If you have opportunities out there, do you maybe make an exception for unified storage or still kind of draw the line and not use it?
It would depend on the environment. If they had, a Windows environment already, I'd probably recommend they stick with one, particularly the smaller environments, because they already know if they've got someone in-house that's sort of the computer expert, they already know how to use those tools. And it's having to relearn some of those things is difficult. But in a very small environment that might have one server that's the main controller and the Exchange server, which is not a good combination, but let's talk pretend here. They don't want to stand up a separate file server, but they've got lots of space on the SAN, okay, or on the device. So yeah, in that case, we'll go ahead and do it. It's very much a case by case determination.
I've actually, with unified storage, I went through a learning curve starting about a year ago. Started with my professional work responsibilities, but I came across the Netgear ReadyNAS series, and I've come to really like them for what they are, a lot of value and a lot of features for the price, right? You don't get everything, right? You don't have tiering, you don't have fiber channel. It's the ReadyNAS units I've worked on are all iSCSI, plus SIFS, plus NFS, plus FTP, HTTP, all on down the line of protocols. And they work good for that, right? I've used them both in vSphere and Hyper-V. And I've used a couple others, but that's the one I've used the most. And I like the use case. There are limitations, especially around the permissions that go along with accessing those types of shares. It's not as granular as the Windows permissions model. But, to be fair, if you do a Windows file server on a Windows operating system, the permissions, now once you understand it, are good, but if you have to fix what's broken, it can be very complicated.
Absolutely. Yeah, and my rule of thumb is shares are always full control, and you just use NTFS to do the permissions.
But, yeah, absolutely.
I think that's pretty common.
Yeah, it took me a while, early on in my career in the NT4 era, to just get it through my head that the share permissions are only the entry point, and then what matters is the NTFS permissions. So, you and I go a little bit back. You might remember. Do you remember Novell NetWare?
In fact, I grew up on it, yeah.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I still love pulling up some old KB. I might as well save it because it'll probably fall offline. But some of the permissions, like if you'd run the flag command, they were just incredible what you could do with NetWare that you still can't do with Windows. I think you could do delete only, right? You can't read it, you can't write it, but you could delete it. It was some crazy stuff.
Well, one of the things that they brought to the table, too, was what Microsoft finally brought a few years ago through what they call access-based enumeration. Are you familiar with that?
No. Enlighten me.
It's basically one of the biggest downfalls of a Windows server, a Windows file server, was the fact that you could see everybody's files even or folders even if you couldn't access those folders.
Oh, so if there was a folder that was somewhat self-documenting, like a termination plan for the end of the month or something.
Right.
You can't get in there, but you know something's coming.
Right. So, well, Novell, if you didn't have access to the folder, you couldn't see the folder. Microsoft finally added that through an add-on back in Windows Server 2003. It took them that long through a service called Access-Based Enumeration, and I don't believe it's still the default. But it's one of those things that when it enumerates the file list or the folder list of what you can see, it does it based on the access permissions that you have. It doesn't just dump all the contents like it used to. So Windows is still, in some ways, still catching up to what Novell was doing back in 94.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially
as a file server. I mean, it was and a network operating system, for that matter. I mean, it was, at the time, it was pretty superior. I mean, like, if you deleted a user or locked them out, boom, they were out. You know, there was there's no caching. It's an architectural difference. But I enjoyed it back in the day. I started my career there as well. So kind of back to unified storage. You know, I find storage is part of virtualization. It's always one of the areas I think I can get into the most trouble if you under-provision it in terms of performance or you know, miss out on some features that you need. For the SMB, Scott, in your practice, if you had to make a recommendation for storage protocol, direct attached storage, iSCSI, NFS fiber channel, you know, as the small side of the SMB, what would you recommend at the highest level? I'm sure I know a lot of features go into it, but do you have like a natural choice in terms of protocols?
Yeah, for a very small SMB, I'm probably going to recommend either direct attached or iSCSI. If they need, and that's going to, the choice is going to depend on a couple of factors. Number one, if it's just a single VMware server, we'll just do direct attached. If you ever add more on the line, then we can address it then. There's no need to go through the expense, maybe, unless you need super performance, but let's stick with direct attached. If you're going to be going into a multi-host environment where you want to have things like DRS or distributed resource scheduler or, you know, be able to have some additional availability mechanisms, then, yeah, you're going to have to move to shared storage, but let's keep it a little simple with iSCSI.
Sure.
There's no need to muddy the waters with a particularly small client with NFS or fiber channel. Not that they're particularly complex, but everything supports iSCSI these days.
How about the switch fabric? Do you put it on a separate Ethernet switch or separate VLAN or just stack it up on the smallest of environments, use the same IP scheme?
At the very minimum, I always recommend at least a separate non-routable VLAN for the iSCSI traffic.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer to see it done with separate physical switches. Some organizations don't either have the money or the desire to do that. So at the very minimum, I do recommend that traffic be separated out into its own basically private virtual network with access controls wherever they're available, either on the SAN, on the initiator side, whatever.
Yeah, so like that's exactly what I would do. I would make a VLAN, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a separate interface. Of course, if it was a separate interface, it's better separation. But it'd be an isolated VLAN, and I would actually ask my network team, you know, to make it like VLAN 999, something that doesn't go anywhere, that's not routed, it doesn't associate to an IP space. There's no, and we would put it as 192.168, right? It would just be a very private space, and all we would put in there would be, in the VMware world, you know, a couple of VMware VM kernel interfaces, the storage interfaces, ideally more than two of each. And then, of course, your friendly Veeam proxy in there to do your direct SAN mode backups. Another cheap plug, sorry about that. But, I would always do it that way as well. Sometimes I've done it where it's all the same address space, but you know what? Weird stuff happens that way, and you don't really want your storage protocols contending on the same fabric with, guest broadcasts and other things that go on in a network. So as much separation as possible would be recommended.
I just did that actually for a client. They have a three VMware host environment and a couple of Echologic arrays. And it was, they were having some issues, with one of their hosts. And we went in and took a look at the entire environment and rebuilt a lot of it. And everything was on the same VLAN. And that's not secure, and from a performance standpoint, not generally recommended. So we've rebuilt the environment using the same, unfortunately right now, IP address space that they had, the same VLANs. But once they have a break in their season, which they'll have this summer, we're going to be re-architecting that yet again. So, yeah, we got to build it to a point to some kind of best practice. But, sometimes you got to work with what you got.
Understood. Well, hey, Scott, it's been great talking to you again. Good to hear that the new role is going good. Thank you for sharing your insight on unified storage and other storage decisions for the SMB.
No problem. Thanks again, Rick.
All right. Cut. We're done.